program that trains teens to rebuild a gutted house in a day will give them a boost in a tight job market. NPR's Yuki Noguchi visited the site and has this story.
It's nice weather for a Blitz build. It's dry and temperate. Jim Beck is development director for Sasha Bruce Youth Work, a program that helps troubled teens. He surveys all the work that needs to be done to transform this shell of a building into what will be a three-bedroom brick house for homeless youth.
We're looking at where a bathroom will be, and they're framing up the spot where we'll be putting a tub later today.
Many of the 120 volunteers are in Washington for the American Institute of Architects Conference. They stream in and out carrying mostly donated lumber and tools. The day's tasks include installing new floors and windows, laying brick on an addition, and building a greenhouse and garden.
Sort of like extreme home makeover.
I know. Only those shows, they don't really let you know all the stuff that goes on before they go on camera. There's a lot of prep that has to go in.
Prep that includes training Domingo Williams. Williams is a lanky 18-year-old who's getting his GED online while training for what he hopes will lead to a job in construction.
And I helped make this right here, so... Scaffold. I think that is what it's called. I'm not sure.
William spends his spare time writing poetry and music, but he's not a man of many words until you get him talking about the upstairs of the house where Williams and his fellow trainees spent the past few weeks tearing down walls and clearing debris.
This right here, at first they was old. We had to knock them out. They was old and rusty.
So do you look at it now and you think, oh, this is nice and clean?
Yeah, like when I first came up here like this, I was scared. I thought it was raccoons up here and all that. But I can't wait to see how it's going to look when it's finished.
There are some jobs William says he's not equipped for, like working on the roof in the rain or the summer heat.
Raining and all that outside, and they still up there.
Were you up there?
No, I ain't go up there.
Williams is among about 20 remaining trainees in a class that started off with 35 teens. Tina Rose Brown is a career counselor with the program.
We're trying to weed out the young people who we feel may not be ready to get up at 7 o'clock in the morning and hit a hammer or to follow rules that include pulling up your pants and making sure you use workplace-friendly language.
Just then, Brown's cell phone buzzes.
Give me a second. This is actually one of my young people now. Yes, brother.
It's one of the trainees, stranded and asking for someone to come pick him up.
Can somebody pick you up by the Popeyes? We don't really have nobody who can come down here and get you, Adrian. Everybody's here already, working. Adrian, please, it's almost 11.
These are the perils of training teens for the work world. Kara Fuller is the director of the training program.
Oh, man, that's probably one of our largest challenges is getting people here on time. It's like construction does not start at 1 o'clock, okay? Like you need to get up and get here, which is the really discussion is about what time you go to bed.
Fuller and the other instructors say they spend a lot of time helping the teens manage the realities of their lives, a lack of transportation or problems at home.
It's not the hard skills, it's the soft skills that really you have to work on, because you can teach someone how to use a hammer, but if they can't get there on time with a good attitude, you're not going to get it.
The Youth Build program is trying to place 10 to 15 of their current trainees in internships they hope will lead to full-time jobs. 80% of their alumni are currently employed or have gone on to more schooling. Domingo Williams says he's optimistic about his chances of getting a job, especially after he gets his certification. By late afternoon, the day's Blitz build is declared a success. An addition that started the day bare is now laid with brick. Empty spaces in the wall now have windows, and there is a functioning greenhouse and garden.
Do you think you'll ever want to build your own house?
Maybe though.
Construction is due to finish on the house in July, targeting a fall move-in date. Yuki Noguchi, NPR News, Washington.
When Joey Ramone died, he left behind a number of song fragments. They have been collected and cleaned up and put in a new album, which was released this month, 11 years after his death from lymphoma. NPR's Joel Rose reports.
The Ramones were there at the birth of punk rock. None of the Ramones were actually related, but they all changed their last names to Ramone. They wore matching skinny jeans and leather jackets. The Ramones songs were short and to the point, with hooks that are still impossibly catchy. Their first album stunned listeners and critics. Here's how Joey Ramone described its influence in a 1991 interview in Finland that's posted on YouTube.
That's when we realized that we really had something totally unique, and there was something completely different about us that was not like anything else before us. You know, we revolutionized rock and roll and changed the world musically and changed people's attitudes, and everybody started playing like us.
Joey Ramone is best known as the band's lead singer, but he also wrote some of the Ramones' most famous songs, including Sheena is a Punk Rocker and Beat on the Brat. And he released one solo album after the band broke up in 1996. When Ramone died of lymphoma at age 49, he left behind a number of demo recordings and song fragments, often recorded at home on cheap cassette machines. Joey's brother, Mickey Lee, recorded two of them.
The ones I had were recorded on a $38 microphone that I had gotten from Lester Bangs. I had never thought that these were going to be used for this purpose.
Lee is the executive producer of his brother's new album, which he named You Know, after one of Joey's favorite expressions. At one time, Lee also played in a band with the influential rock critic Lester Bangs. Lee says the idea for this album started with the two demos he recorded in Joey's East Village apartment in 2001.
I don't want to fight tonight. Merry Christmas. I don't want to fight tonight.
Lee also negotiated for the rights to other unreleased recordings, some of them dating back to the 1980s. Then he and producer Ed Stasium went through a time-consuming process of stripping those demo recordings down and then building them back up around Joey's vocals.
We basically just had vocals. Sometimes there was just drums on one track, a guitar on one track. It was very minimal.
All we wanted was the bare bones, you know.
And that's all we kept.
The elements of the song.
All we kept from the original recordings were Joey's vocals.
Some of them were very scratchy, a little distorted, and it was a lot of work. You'd never know it if I didn't tell you, so you didn't hear it.
Why have we been torn?
Producer Ed Stasium worked and played on more than 10 albums with the Ramones. Stasium and Lee say they tried hard to be faithful to what Joey would have wanted.
Joey was a perfectionist with his performance, with his lyrical content. Even if he hadn't written the lyrics, he wanted to make sure all addiction was there.
He cared.
He did.
A lot.
Well, I was tripping, I was slopping, I was reeling and rocking. I couldn't sleep at all last night. Well, I was tossing, I was turning, I was rocking and a bopping. I couldn't sleep at all.
Joey Ramone was born Jeffrey Ross Hyman in Forest Hills, Queens. He and Mickey Lee, born Mitchell Lee Hyman, grew up together. They shared a single record collection and started playing in bands as teenagers.
He wanted to be a producer, and he took us into the studio, this band I had called Purple Majesty, and produced a record for us. He was 15 years old. I don't know if that's when I knew he was going to be Joey Ramone, but I knew he had this intense love of music and making things happen.
We're going to have it. We're going to have it. Oh, rock and roll is the answer. Rock and roll is the answer. Oh, rock and roll is the answer. Rock and roll is the answer. Oh, yeah.
Now it's Lee's turn to be the producer. He says he felt some pressure to bring in high-profile guest artists to play on his brother's posthumous record.
You know, we get the biggest names we could get because that was going to bring attention to it. And I was totally opposed to that from the get-go. That's not what I want. I really wanted to keep it pure and organic and to his friends. And I didn't want to, I wanted to keep the focus on Joey, not on Bono or whoever, you know.
In the end, Lee only invited Joey's friends and collaborators to play on the record, including Steven Van Zandt, Richie Ramone, and Joan Jett. And that's probably how Joey Ramone would have wanted it. In interviews, he talked a lot about how proud he was that the Ramones never strayed from their original vision just for the sake of having a hit.
You know, we were always there for our fans and there for ourselves. We never, you know, sold ourselves out or... We never wanted to play dance music or crap like that, you know what I mean? We always stay true to what the Ramones are, you know?
You could say the same thing about Joey Ramone's brief solo career, too. Joel Rose, NPR News, New York.
Since the death of Osama bin Laden, Yemen has become the hottest front in the war against al-Qaeda. Frontline travels into the heart of Yemen's radical heartland to show how members of al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula have taken advantage of turmoil in the country to impose their rule on areas of South Yemen. And former FBI agent Ali Soufan tells the story of an al-Qaeda operative he interrogated before 9/11. It's all on Frontline, Al-Qaeda in Yemen, Tuesday, May 29th at 9 on WILL-TV.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 24th of May, 2012. It's the birthday of the novelist Michael Chabon, born in Washington, D.C., 1963, who grew up loving comic books and then started to write his own. And when he was 10, wrote his first short story starring Sherlock Holmes. Went to graduate school at the University of California, Irvine. Wanted to be a writer, so he wrote a novel as his thesis. One of his professors sent it off to an agent, and Chabon got a nice advance. The novel came out, The Mysteries of Pittsburgh. It was a bestseller when it came out in 1988. It took him a few years to do his second book, Wonder Boys, 1995, another bestseller. And then Chabon decided to go in a new direction. He had found a box of comics which he'd saved from childhood. He opened it up, the smell came pouring out, and he set out to write an epic story about comic book creators in the 1940s. It was The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay, a novel that moved from the ghetto of Nazi-occupied Prague to the bohemian nightlife of New York City. A new novel, Telegraph Avenue, will be published this fall. And it's the birthday of the poet Joseph Brodsky, born Leningrad, 1940. He was publishing poems by the age of 18. When he was 23, he was charged by the authorities with malicious parasitism, sentenced to 5 years in a Siberian labor camp. Went back to Leningrad, tried to make a living as a poet, kept getting in trouble with the authorities, and in 1972, the KGB put him on a plane to Vienna. He was taken in by an American professor of Russian literature, introduced to W.H. Auden, who helped secure Brodsky residency in this country. He got teaching positions, and in 1987, won the Nobel Prize in Literature. Here's a poem for today by Julie Cadwallader Staub, entitled Looks. Perhaps everyone else has forgotten it, but in the days when my mother poured her midsection into a girdle, when she gathered her nylons into flimsy donuts before unrolling